I hope you enjoy this talk. These talks are always offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to them. And your support, or dana, also makes a big difference. Dana is the ancient Pali word for spontaneous generosity of heart. If you feel inspired to support these talks by offering dana, you can do so by visiting my website at www.mindfulvalley.com. Thank you so much. So tonight I wanted to talk about the art of the pause. And to start, I wanted to say, many of you probably know, my husband Brent is an artist and a wood maker slash chair maker, and he's also sort of an expert at sharpening old tools, which he does a lot of. And he actually learned how to do this from an old Japanese master. And it honestly, to do it right, it seems to take him forever. It's very precise. And the other day I happened to be sitting in his big chair by the fire, and just out of sheer curiosity, I picked up one of his books that was next to his chair, and I found this story or parable that I thought was a good illustration of what I wanted to talk about tonight. So I'm going to share that with you. As the story goes, a woman was walking through the forest when she came upon a young man who was furiously sawing at a tree with a very thick trunk. And the man was covered in sweat and just exhausted and didn't seem to be making a whole lot of progress. And so the woman asked him, she said, "Young man, you seem to be in quite the hurry to cut through that tree, but it appears that your saw blade is very dull." And the man didn't even look up. He was still sweating, and he simply continued struggling to pull this dull blade through the trunk. And the woman was really confused about this, and she asked him, "Sir, why don't you stop for a moment so that you can sharpen your blade?" When the man barely looked up from his sawing, and he said, "I have to fell this tree, and then two after that, and two after that by the end of the day. I don't have time to sharpen my saw." And so I loved that. This little parable, it points to so many things, especially the great need, of course, that we all have for self-care and how important it is for all of us to take the time, that pause in the midst of our lives to, you know, sharpen our saw, you know, to take care of ourselves. So we all need to do this. We all need, in a way, to sharpen our blades so that we won't be constantly struggling with ourselves and our lives, or making it just that much harder on ourselves, you know, trying to cut those thick trees in our lives, the forest of our life, with dull blades. And the paradox, of course, as we all know, is that when we do take that time to stop and take care of ourselves, not only are we able to get more done, but we're really able to enjoy our actual lives more in the present moment, you know, without being lost, so lost or caught up in our endless to-do list or our planning or all the narrative and stories that we're constantly chewing on, right? And so what this parable also points to, I think, is what I want to talk tonight about, which is what I consider the lost art of the pause, the lost art, our ability to unhook ourselves or let go, even momentarily, from what can seem like the constant, never-ending distraction of our own minds, you know, not just the world, but what's going on in here. So all of our planning, all of our regretting, all our judging, all our internal self-talk that seems never-ending. Instead of simply being present with our distracted minds, so often we tend to want to distract ourselves from our distracted minds with even more distraction, right? And, of course, we think this is going to help drown it all out. and it just makes it worse. And if we really start to pay more attention to this, we might start to notice that we seem to have endless strategies for distracting ourselves, okay? You can start really noticing all of these. It can be a fun practice. Some of the more very obvious ways that we can distract ourselves from ourselves is by getting lost in the internet, maybe for hours, you know? Or maybe watching TV night after night after night after night, never pausing to think about turning it off. Or maybe we indulge in too much food or, you know, sex or drugs or alcohol. These are very obvious ones. Or maybe we, you know, endlessly organize or fix or basically make ourselves crazy busy. You know, we can do that as well. It's avoiding ourselves, distracting ourselves from our minds. Maybe we stay up way too late reading because we don't want to put the book down or put whatever we're doing down long enough to be with ourselves. We're distracting ourselves from ourselves. So you can start to notice all these strategies that we have. And of course, again, distracting ourselves from ourselves actually still just makes it worse. Our busy minds and our difficult emotions, if you will, haven't gone anywhere. Have they? When we distract, have they gone anywhere? Right? All we've done is to train ourselves literally in the art of distraction rather than the art of the pause. And if we are not careful or mindful about this, this art of distraction, if you will, can really become an entrenched habit. So much so that we might not even notice that we are lost in it. Don't even notice it. It can almost be like a trance. We've become entranced in it. This summer, for instance, I had what I consider a kind of a twilight moment. It really felt that way. My niece and nephew came to visit us, and we took them into Washington, D.C. To go to the art museums. And when we walked out of one of the museums onto the National Mall, there were literally hundreds of people. It was maybe 200 people streaming towards us and then past us. And in this vast sea of people, I could not spot a single person, not one person, who was not looking at their telephone. I am not kidding. I kept looking at my husband and saying, "What is this? What's going on?" I thought it was performance art. I really thought it must be some kind of weird performance art because it was 100 people. Sadly, you know, it wasn't, you know? Anybody experience that? I don't live in the city anymore, so it was really astonishing to me. And a few weeks later, on Facebook, ironically, I saw a post that I really loved that spoke to the ubiquity of this. It said, "There's a guy in this coffee shop sitting at a table, not on his phone, not on a laptop, just drinking coffee like a psychopath." It's really become just so ubiquitous. We don't even notice it. And it's so interesting to me that something that was designed to help us to communicate better, the telephone, has evolved into something that seems to be training us to be actually less equipped for actual, real, intimate conversation. All our conversations these days, if you'll notice, tend to be short and instant. We have instant messaging. We have 280 character tweets. We communicate our emotions with emoticons. So we click on a like or a frown to express these complex emotions. And by the way, we can't seem to stop scrolling, okay? So this is the internet, but you might also notice in your life, are you scrolling in some way in the mind? You know, we can't even look up from our phones long enough sometimes to look into somebody else's eyes. And if there is suddenly a moment of silence, this can feel sometimes really uncomfortable. And then what do we do? maybe we reach for our phone again, or we turn on the TV, or we reach for that drink or something to eat, or whatever it is that we think we need to do to keep ourselves from just being present with our thoughts, with ourselves, with our emotions. That's my little soapbox. So many years ago, a researcher was studying couples to determine what types of techniques work to create better communication. And I found this really interesting. He was letting this couple discuss a problem they were having, and at the same time, he was monitoring their heart rates. And when the heart rate, of course, got up to 100 beats per minute because they were arguing, he told them the camera had broken. He said, "Wait, stop, the camera broke." And he asked them to stop for a few minutes. "I got to go fix the camera, so you guys please stop, you know, and I'll come back," and they could begin again. And what he discovered was that when he returned, the couple was able to discuss their problems much more calmly and rationally, and they expressed more compassion for each other and were more able to be creative together in their solutions around this, right? So in essence, what the researcher had done was to give them that space of a pause, you know, and some breathing room in their conversation, some time to be present, not only with themselves, but with each other. And this made all the difference. Okay. Viktor Frankl, the famous Australian neurologist, who is also a Holocaust survivor, actually, has a great quote about this. It says, "Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space lies our freedom and power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and freedom." I love that quote. And so the same pause is what we're learning to do here, what we're learning to cultivate through the practice of meditation. And it can honestly, as many of you know, just that simple pause can change our entire perspective once we really learn it. So during one of the last 8-week MBSR workshops that I taught, at the very end, when everybody kind of goes around and they share what they've learned, one gentleman just said that the thing that had absolutely changed his life, he said it was life-changing for him, was learning how to create that simple space of a pause. Okay. Another student, Sarah Jones, many of you may know who comes here to Sangha, sent me an email a few years back to tell me the story that I loved. She said she was driving in this really heavy rain for miles and miles on end, and we all know how that can be on the highway. And of course, there was this nervous energy around the sound of the rain and the rain itself, kind of that constant background noise of rain was carrying a kind of anxiety, you know, nervous energy around it. And then suddenly, as she's driving, she passed through a tunnel, right? And there was that brief moment of silence, just that pause in the anxiety of the rain, the thinking, right? And then it began again. And she said, "Shell, that's just what meditation feels like to me. There's that pause." And I think we can all recognize that. I thought it was a great way to describe that. My teacher, Tara Brach, calls this pause the sacred pause. And the more we practice it, the more we can really sense how sacred it really is. It's sacred. And it's sacred for many reasons, but one of the main reasons is that it takes us out of our constant doing mode, our constant sawing, if you will, and lets us enter into the being mode in the present right now, however it is, with however, whatever we're feeling. Which, by the way, might be really unpleasant, right? Whatever we're feeling, which is, of course, why we so often don't want to be in the moment. We don't want to be in the pause because it might be uncomfortable in some way. Through our practice, we're training ourselves to consciously choose the pause. We're choosing to suspend our activity and simply let go, to stop sighing, if you will, even just for a moment. And What this means is that we are asking ourselves to stop grasping so tightly to our planning, our judging, our arguments, our opinions, all of it, which, if we're honest, can feel a little bit terrifying sometimes, right? And one of the reasons for this is that in the pause, we're momentarily awakening from the dream of our doing, and we're coming face to face with our actual present reality, not a video of it, our actual reality. It's like this pause helps us to realize that we've been, in a way, watching a movie, right, in here. And it allows us to recognize that, hey, here we are, we're eating popcorn in this theater, and look, there's other people here all around us, right? It pops that balloon of self, the story of self, which is what we've been clinging to so tightly, which is why this is so scary. Guys with me? Okay. So when we're not in the present, we are essentially living inside that movie. We're believing it. We're in the narrative. We're in the story, which of course means we're dreaming. Okay. We're not truly awake or aware of who we really are, which is not solid or permanent. We're fluid, constantly changing, just like everything else. So the past has already happened, right? Where's that? Right? Our version of the past is usually not accurate. That's a little bit made up most of the time, isn't it? Your siblings have another way of seeing it. So the past is a dream. It's mostly made up. Our future isn't here yet, hasn't arrived. So that's a dream as well, right? The writer and teacher Alan Watts reminds us the future is a concept. Just that right there. The future is a concept. It does not exist. There is no such thing as tomorrow. There never will be, because time is always now. That's one of the things we discover when we stop talking to ourselves and stop thinking. We find there is only present, only an eternal now. So, in essence, when we are not allowing ourselves to pause and experience the present, when we're caught up in the dream or the movie more than our actual lives, that we're sitting right here in the theater, if you will, what we're doing is we're robbing ourselves of truly experiencing all the many moments of our actual life. We're robbing ourselves. At the same time, we're in many ways robbing ourselves of the ability to change, to have a different perspective, to see our lives in a new way when we're distracting ourselves. The great teacher Ajahn Chah, who's a teacher of my teacher of my teacher of my teacher, kind of goes back. He tells us, what's the world? What's the world? He says, it's a preoccupation that gets you stirred up, that disturbs you right now. If it arises in the mind, make yourself understand. The world is nothing but a preoccupation. Preoccupations obscure the mind so that it can't see itself. Okay? Well, that was, you can chew on that for a long time, probably that whole paragraph. So that pause is really important because it's asking our doing mind to take a break, right? So that we can rest in awareness, we can rest in the present moment. And so just like the rest we give our bodies at night, we also need to learn to rest the mind and just be. Rest the mind. We so often don't want to rest the mind. The pause also helps us to shift our brains out of our habitual patterns of distracting ourselves from the present. It shifts us out of the dream world of thinking, our planning, our doing, our worrying, distracting ourselves, whatever it is, and helps us to actually start to notice or become aware of all our habitual patterns of thinking So this means we start to notice how we're distracting ourselves from the present moment, which again is often very unconscious. We're in trance, so we're not seeing it clearly. It's like an example of this is sometimes when I'm meditating, the refrigerator sound will suddenly go off and I'll be aware of this new silence. Okay? So I wasn't aware of the refrigerator until it wasn't there anymore. Anybody else have this experience? Right? And so it's the same way with our habitual patterns of thinking. They are so often just in the background of our consciousness and we're completely unaware of them. Right? So just also to say for some of us, myself included, I know, staying super busy and distracted, even without, you know, being plugged in as we all are, might have just been what we grew up with as part of our family culture. Got to stay busy, you know. Many years ago, I discovered or became aware of a belief that I'd grown up with that had become a kind of personal mantra for me. But really, it was more like that background noise. You know, I didn't really notice it until I started practicing, of course. And then what I first recognized was this belief had the voice of my father. It wasn't even my voice, right? And my father was a man who really, he was a constant blur. He could never sit still or have a conversation or engage, even for a second. He was just a blur. And I used to hear this belief in my head a lot, so I know he must have said it a lot. And I'll tell you what that is. My earliest memory of hearing it was when I was sitting on a floor coloring. Many of you may have heard the story before. I think I was six or something. I was coloring. And my father came home from work, and when he saw me coloring, he put his hands on his hips, and he said in a really scolding voice, "What are you accomplishing?" I was six. "What are you accomplishing? What are you accomplishing?" And I heard that over and over and over. "What are you accomplishing?" And to him, coloring was keeping me away from real work, even at age six or seven. You know, I should have been doing something, accomplishing. I should have been helping my mother with the dishes. I should have been cleaning my room. I should have been doing my homework. I definitely should not have been wasting my time coloring. And in retrospect, maybe this is why I ended up becoming a meditation teacher, because I now get to teach people to sit down and attempt to not do anything, don't accomplish anything. That's my message. Don't be anything either. And yet, you know, with all conditioned beliefs, what happened is that as I grew up, my father no longer needed to ask me that question. You know, he didn't need to ask me that question. I was asking it myself all the time, mostly unconsciously. It had become habitual background noise, just like that refrigerator. And I was doing this both consciously and unconsciously. And most of the time, of course, coming up short was never enough to please him, so I was constantly trying to do that. And it wasn't the truth, right? I was living in that dream world and basing all of my behavior on it. So just for a moment, what I'd like us to do is just come into a very brief contemplation. So I'm going to invite you to go ahead and close the eyes. Just take a nice deep breath in and out, settle a little. And those of you who'd like to can even place a hand on the heart or the belly if you'd like to get more in touch with the heart. What I'd like to invite you to consider is if there's any underlying message or belief in the background of your mind that might in some way be urging you to be doing something that keeps you constantly moving or in some way won't let you stop. What won't let you stop? Why can't you stop? Why can't you stop? You might even, to tap in, consider what might happen if you allowed yourself to stop or let go. What would happen if you allowed yourself to stop or let go? To feel what's here. May even be an emotion that might arise with the belief, if you see a belief. Might just be an emotion without a belief. As you're ready, you can open the eyes. And so, as we did that brief inquiry, there might have been an old voice or story that arose, or maybe an emotion which is often attached. Might not have been, but it's helpful to see it if it did arise. I'm just curious, did anybody have a sense of fear or kind of an anxious feeling that came up when thinking about stopping or pausing? Yeah, a couple hands. Yeah, nods. Fear. So it might be helpful to remember that the sense of fear, again, is in our actual DNA. And so we're literally fighting against our own biology. That's helpful. And I've mentioned in here many times before, in order for our ancestors to survive and pass on their genes, they had to truly be constantly vigilant, you know, when they were searching for food and protecting or their searching areas from other tribes and literally outrunning other large animals, you know, saber-toothed tigers and that kind of thing. If our ancestors had been lounging around by the lake drinking their cave people cocktails, they likely would have been munched, right? So what's happened is that we've all evolved with a rather strong part of our brain, the amygdala, that is often still on high alert, even though we're no longer being chased by saber-toothed tigers. So sometimes even our small worries or fears, maybe something as simple as meeting a deadline, can feel like we're literally being chased by a tiger. And this is why it might be helpful to know that it's often very difficult to allow ourselves to stop, to relax, or just be. For many people, when I go to a public venue, a more public venue where people have come to hear me talk about meditating but don't often meditate themselves, and it's new for them, people have come up to me afterwards and said just the idea of closing their eyes, even for a moment, feels terrifying, right? And just way too difficult to close our eyes. And this is actually where our meditation practice comes in, because it can literally help to train both the mind and the body to learn, to relax, to pause, to stop running and just be. It can also help the pause be less scary, less terrifying. We become more familiar with the pause, and then it doesn't see, we're not as afraid of it. And the good news, of course, is that study after study has shown that we can literally change the structure of our brains through meditation practice, and this includes that hypervigilance of the amygdala. We can change that through our practice, which means that in essence, we are capable, through this practice, of helping our brains to evolve, which I love. And so again, with our own practice, We need to begin with the intention of not striving for anything, which intuitively seems completely against our own nature. And again, it is. It really is against our own nature to not want to strive and keep going. And whenever we're practicing, it's helpful to remind ourselves that we are not trying to achieve anything or reach some kind of a special state, okay? What we're training ourselves to do is to receive each moment as it comes in the present, to be really aware of it, and then to let it go. Be aware of it and let it go. So instead of trying to control and manipulate everything, which, by the way, is a habit that we have based on an ancient fear, we're learning through our practice to let go and go with the flow, if you will, and allow ourselves, again, to be fluid. And that flow is the constantly changing present moment. This moment right now, and then this moment, and then this moment, and then this moment. So through this practice, we can train ourselves to be in this flow of the present in many ways. And we can begin very simply by paying attention to the body, our home, this body where we live, which is always right here, always in the present moment, even though we're often not aware of it. We're literally not often aware of our body. That's what this practice is helping us to do. So we often start this practice, as we all know, by paying attention to the flow of breath in the body, because it's the easiest way to notice how we ourselves are constantly in motion, since if the breath stopped, we literally couldn't keep going, right? And then we expand our awareness of the present moment in our bodies by paying attention to all the flowing senses in the bodies, which are always present and also always changing. So instead of going away to some otherworldly place or blissful place in our practice, we want to stay here awake and pay close attention to the changing flow and dance of sensations in our bodies. So when we're practicing, we notice the breath, and then we notice sounds and body sensations and touch and temperature, smells, tastes, the light behind our eyes. Are you there with me now? You feeling it in the body a little bit more as I'm talking? Or were you not present in the body? Just notice, right? And then we begin to notice that what's also happening in the moment is a constant flow of thoughts, which are also always constantly changing, arising and passing, right? And while we practice, our job is to simply watch them come and go in the present moment without grabbing onto the narrative or the storyline, without getting entangled in our thoughts or getting whisked away into the dream of or movie of the past or the future, trying to figure out what that looks like, trying to figure it out, trying to struggle with the past, all of it, right? So we're just simply watching it, just like we watch the body. The mind is the sixth sense. And it is here in the present, in the space of that longer pause, that we're most able to start to recognize that an old movie or tape or belief isn't necessarily true. We can recognize the old Zen phrases, maybe so, maybe not. You know? Not always so. And within that pause, we can learn that we can stop relying so much on the ancient conditioning of the mind and instead learn to listen in the silence of the pause to our wise, good hearts, which have been here all along, just waiting for us to listen. Please stop and listen to me. Listen to the heart. The teacher Osho tells us, remember the emphasis on the heart. The mind lives in doubt. The heart lives in trust. The mind lives in doubt. The heart lives in trust. So I think I'm going to end there and invite us into a practice. So just invite you into a comfortable posture again for practice. Just taking a nice deep breath in, deep breath out. And again, resting the mind and the body as the body rests on the chair cushion. And so, again, the way that we can access the pause is to just come home to the body, be in the body. The pause is about dropping out of the thinking mind, just being aware of the body, what's right here. And so I'm going to offer you this practice that you can do anytime, actually. And there's a phrase that comes with it, which is simply, I'm aware that. I'm aware that. And I'm going to guide you through this a little bit. So with the thought in the mind, I'm aware that, you might notice what sounds you're aware of. Thinking, I'm aware of this sound. I'm aware of silence. Whatever it is, keep that I'm aware of in the mind and just listen. When the thinking comes back in, no worries, just see it. Bring your attention and focus back to the thought, I'm aware that. I'm going to invite you now to open up to the senses and the body. You might even do a brief body scan, starting at the top of the head. And name to yourself anything you're aware of. Maybe I'm aware of the feeling of my hair on my skin, on my face, my neck. I'm aware that my nose is a little cold. Maybe the fabric of your clothing, temperature. What are you aware of in the body? I'm aware that. If you get lost, you can just go through the senses. There'd be light behind the eyes, color in the eyes, smell, sound, touch, taste. What are you aware of in your surroundings, in your space, in your chair, in this sanctuary? And what about your thinking, your own movie? You can let the thought be, I'm aware of the thought that, I'm aware that I'm thinking. So not the truth of it, just the thought. I'm aware of the thought that, I'm aware that I'm preoccupied with this thought, this story, this movie. What are you aware of? You might even notice if you're aware of some kind of a mood or a feeling in the body and the heart, an emotion. It might not be one, just notice. Remembering your emotion is not you. In the last minute, I'm just going to invite you to continue using that phrase, I'm aware that, and let your awareness be open to whatever you're experiencing and naming it as it arises and passes. Just staying present, being aware. You might even notice how the mind likes to distract itself from the present. What takes you away? And finally, with the eyes still closed, just listening to these words from Tara, writes, often the moment when we most need to pause is exactly when it feels the most intolerable to do so. Pausing in a fit of anger or when overwhelmed by sorrow or filled with desire may be the last thing we want to do. Pausing can feel like falling helplessly through space. We have no idea of what will happen. We fear we might be engulfed by the rawness of our rage or grief or desire. Yet without opening to the actual experience of the moment, radical acceptance is not possible. Through the sacred art of pausing, we develop the capacity to stop hiding, stop running away from our experience. We begin to trust in our natural intelligence, in our naturally wise heart, in our capacity to open to whatever arises. like awakening from a dream. In the moment of pausing, our trance recedes and radical acceptance becomes possible.